Welcome to Comedians with Ghost Stories. I'm writer and comedian Emily Winter. If you're in the Albuquerque area this weekend, February 17th, 18th, and 19th, I will be headlining Saturday, February 18th at Dry Heat Comedy Club. My husband, Chris Caligero, is headlining on Friday the 17th, and then on Sunday, I'm throwing my 64 comedian joke contest, one-liner madness at Launchpad in Albuquerque. So we've got comedy coming up all weekend. If you're nearby, please come out and see a show. And thanks for listening. Enjoy this episode. Today on the podcast, I'm super excited to have my new friend, Michael Pittman. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Emily. I appreciate you.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for your stories. And so Michael is a rare person on this podcast who is not a comedian, but I met you through my coworker, Freddie, who is obviously a comedy writer. We write on a TV show together. And you came to my annual Bloody Mary crawl called the Bloody Marathon, which we just had in New Orleans. And it was so wonderful to meet you. And you were like, I have some ghost stories. And so I was like, you got to do them on the pod. But you're not a comedian. You're a Navy guy, right?
I was Navy 10 years and federal law enforcement for 23 years. I'm happily retired as of 4 years April coming.
Congratulations. That is wonderful.
Thanks so much. Thank
you. Where are you podcasting from?
Fernandina Beach, Florida.
Ah, wonderful. Cool. And so I'm so excited to hear your stories. Where do they take place? In Florida?
No, they took place in Mississippi. I'm originally from Leland, Mississippi, the home of blues singer Tyrone Davis.
Amazing.
Yes.
So these happened when you were growing up?
Yeah, growing up as a little boy in the country area of Leland, Mississippi. And matter of fact, from my young days, maybe 4 or 5 years old, as I can remember some of the earlier ghost stories, until into my early beginning teens, really.
Wow.
Most vividly, yes. Ghost stories have been a part of my life. And I believe in the afterlife. I really do. As we speak to superstition, you know, it's a real thing in our family. We believe in superstition. Not to say that we don't believe in science,
mm-hmm.
you know, but we have a healthy belief in superstition as well.
I think that magic and superstition and science can both coexist happily because science cannot answer all of our questions yet. So
absolutely.
So take it away. What happened when you were like a 4 or 5 year old? And I guess we'll go in chronological order.
I'll start with the cavalry and what we used to call Indians, now Native Americans, but that's what we knew them, cowboys and Indians. But this was the cavalry. But you know, the cavalry used to capture the Indians. In those days, we lived in the country, and we were in these old houses. And back in those days, we lived on land that was owned by white people typically, and some of our uncles worked for white people who were friends of ours, but were in positions to get our uncles jobs because they were all, you know, one way or another, friends and family to some degree. So we lived on a land called Mr. Cooper's land. Mr. Cooper was a friend of our family who worked for Mississippi Power and Light as a supervisor, and one of my uncles worked for him.
How big was their land?
And it was modest land, but he had an old house where they used to live in, had those tin roofs. But part of the home was built on a graveyard. It was a shack, like we call them shotgun houses, that you can look through the front door and see out the back, literally.
Yes, yeah.
But part of it was on a graveyard. And when I say that, like the back end, as I remember it now, actually was on the graveyard where maybe part of a grave or two was underneath. Back of the house was, because we can see that graves in the back. We played around them all the time, and not where there were headstones, but markings. There were grave here, there's a grave there.
Okay.
It was a norm for us.
Did they have like those flat headstones, or like the ones that are like just nothing, just like a cross or something, just like a
no. Because like back then, a lot of people could not afford, no matter what your race was. Like some people poor is poor, and
yeah. They
could not afford those things. But we knew that I think her name was Miss Louise. I know Miss Eva or Ava. But I remember the burial sites being there, as we were told as kids. I don't remember being afraid, really.
Uh-huh.
Wow. But so some of the things that happened there, we remember my brother and I, the cavalry. We were playing this old car. We used to call them Batman cars. They had those sharp pointed tail lights. I don't know what kind of cars those were. Impalas. Okay. But yeah, so we used to play in those old cars, made our own recreation, you know, and back and forth across the seat, driving it or whatever. And it was cotton field in front of our home on that dirt road. But I remember seeing of course, Cowboys and Indians was one of our things with cap guns. But I remember seeing the cavalry being captured, just a few of them, by these Indians. And they were coming along on the horses and everything, you know, the Indians had their spears or whatever it was with the Native American or the Indian feathers on them, and it was all decorated and had them captured because the cavalry was on horses in front of the Indians, and their hands were tied behind their back. And that's why I remember so vividly, even until today. I just remember all the color, you know, in the faces of the Indians and like the war paint and the feathers hanging from the spears. That was very, very vivid. And they
you were like 4 or 5 and you're playing outside and you're playing Cowboys and Indians when you see this.
Yes, it just coming down a dirt road along that cotton field.
Oh my gosh.
Coming around the bend in front of our home, because the only home was there that I remember was our house. Miss Perlene's house was a little ways down. And in between those two houses was like this, it was like a mill. It wasn't a mill like you would think a lot of people work at, but it was like a shop, like a tin kind of shop, because my uncle worked there. With Mr. Stevens, or another employee of Mr. Cooper. I remember these people. My uncle died there, you know, working for Mississippi Power Light. And I just remember gravel and all that. I just remember. But yeah, I just remember that. My brother and I were playing in that car, you know, and I remember looking through that old cracked windshield. It was a busted car. The cavalry was captured by the Indians, and they were just galloping along, you know. And we were hiding. We had to hide down beneath the dashboard. It was all cracked up and busted with that brownish-looking, puffy, styrofoam stuff popping out of the dash. You know, we peeping over, and yeah, it was. It's just scary, you know, because you watching cowboys and westerns, which we did all the time as kids. Can you imagine that? You know, we're here. We're here. What are we gonna do? You know, as like the little kids in the westerns did. We're gonna go tell, you know, Marshall Dillon or what? You know, what are we gonna do? So yeah, I remember that.
Your brother saw it too.
Oh yes. Speaking of that, when I was in the Navy, we used to tell our stories on the ships because we were from everywhere, all over the place. Uh-huh. And Southern people connected with Southern people. So we had some of the same stories. Or, you know, same kinds of stories, you know. And yeah, so we telling our stories. I used to tell that story. So when one of my friends, who's now a comedian, finally told the story, some of those I told him, when he finally got to meet my brother, we're talking about some things. And he said, hey, look, wait a minute. I want to mention a story to you and you finish it if you can. Mentioned the old car playing in it. My brother finished it right away. We hadn't talked about that thing since we were probably that age. My right hand to the Lord. I'm telling you, we hadn't talked about that probably since that day or that I can remember.
That's amazing. And it must have made you feel less insane, because like you have somebody there to like, this is happening, right?
Self insane, because we know what we know. We feel we're convicted in what it is we have experienced in our lives. You can talk to him now without me around. He'll tell you everything I say now. He'll verify.
That's so wonderful. Holy cow! So what did you do after? Did you tell anybody?
I don't recall.
Yeah.
Because when I do tell this story, if ever I really talk about it, it's the same thing. And when I do talk about it, it's more vivid now. And I try not to talk about it a lot in detail because I think I'm probably adding some things as an adult now as far as the details of vividness and stuff. But, you know, it's more believable to me now, as in I really understand what I feel about the situation from back then, and it's more concrete to me now, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, cause you're obviously like you're older and like you have had time to think about this and you've come out not questioning cause you had a bunch more experiences, right?
Yes. I've had a few more experiences as an adult. Okay. And like the thing we have where in my family and in my community, not my culture necessarily, but my community in this culture, in my community, where we are, like when you're sleeping, I don't know if you ever experienced when you're sleeping and you can't move in your sleep and you think someone's holding you down. Mm-hmm. and you're struggling to wake up. Well, you know, science says this is that or that or this.
Yeah.
We call it the devil riding you. Well, we've had the experience with my aunt, which is another one of those stories. She used to have those experiences, and we used to have them sometimes too. But my aunt had them more than most. My grandmother used to have them when we moved out of the country over into Greenville, Mississippi, town a little bit farther over. And my grandmother used to say, "That's duty bug. That's not the devil. That's duty bug," which is her ex-husband, who's the abusive. So she thought that was him. And she used to put this thing under her mattress. We call mattresses ticks. T-I-C-S, ticks. So she put a knife on her mattress or a fork facing upward. So the prongs could face upward. And her understanding superstitiously was that sharp things would poke a ghost if they got near you. And you can tell the evidence would be that if they got near you close enough, it would leave a puddle of gel where they were poked. So we're like, okay, my dear, when she was expressed that she, Doodlebug came to visit her last night and he was upset.
Uh-huh.
She was being held down, you know, the devil riding her. Okay, but it was always Doodlebug. Never seen gel on the floor. Well, one time we saw gel on the floor when she was exclaiming that that was the case. Yes, that was on a Saturday morning because that's the only time that we could watch cartoons back in those days, the only time it came on.
Mm-hmm.
My dude was screaming in there and scared to come out of the room because we couldn't come out of the room to watch cartoons until my dude said it was okay back in those days.
Whoa.
She went in there, she pointed to that floor, she's screaming, Doodlebug was here, Doodlebug was here. Look, I told you. We saw this purplish gel. I remember it was purplish. And why I say purple, because there was no gel we had in the house other than Trolium jelly.
Yeah.
Was a red can for girls' hair back then. Blue Magic. So it wasn't purple.
Right.
So anyway, so that was the case. So we're convinced now. My Aunt Gloria Jean, you say the same thing, devil riding her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after that, she same says she saw Doodlebug in her when she was being held down. So, but she had it happen a lot. And she was Doodlebug's only daughter by my grandmother.
Okay. That is fascinating. And also, like, sleep paralysis is like a thing that comes up a lot on this podcast because it's like not, it's, you know, there's like science that says it's this, it's that, but like it hasn't really been totally proven or figured out yet. And I watched like a terrifying documentary about sleep paralysis and like different cultures and stuff. They all have different, like, Some people think it's like a evil cat that sits on your chest with like red eyes, and some people say the devil. And I've heard so many different things, and like that's so fascinating because it's just it's not really known what is happening during this. Yeah, that is so wild. I can't believe that. Oh my gosh! Wow, that's so cool.
The only person in my family that's not afraid of cats is my mother. We are definitely afraid of cats for that reason. Yeah, you can carjack me with a cat.
Wow, what an amazing story. How old were you when that happened? Were you like around 4 or 5?
I may have been 11, 12.
Yeah.
You know, the other two, when I was 4 or 5, the washing dishes on their own, dishes washing themselves, and then the money in the ground. So the money in the ground, my mother actually told us this story. I didn't witness that.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother said that some money came out of the ground. When everybody sit on the porch at night. Mm-hmm. I wonder one thing on the porch, but money, my mama said that they were out sitting out there drinking and talking, of course, the family. That was one of the things she did to get together, enjoy each other, you know, on a down day, which is usually Sunday after church. And this is in the daytime, actually. And they were out there drinking and talking and stuff. And some money came up, just popped out of the ground, dirt rose up fresh. And everybody was talking. And they thought that was the spirit of one of our loved ones who had passed away recently, which was my uncle. Who worked for Mississippi Power and Light under Mr. Cooper.
Dude,
and which was right beside the house.
Oh my God.
In that shop I was telling you about.
Yeah.
And it burned to death right there. So they said that money. Yeah. So they said that money had popped up out of the ground. And the idea was that, and I don't know where this came from, do not curse. They had their spiritual, I mean, their superstitious ideas. And someone cursed. And the money went back out on the ground. She tells that story.
Grab it?
I'm sorry?
Where they could grab the money, it just like sunk back down?
It sunk back down. It says somebody cursed. Oh. And that's all I know of that story. And my mom tells that story to this day. And I ask questions like you asked. Now that I'm older, Well, mama, why does somebody just grab the money?
Yeah.
I don't know, boy. Don't be asking me no questions.
I love it.
I have seen dishes wash themselves with my own eyes.
Okay, this I need to know about because I want this ghost. I want the ghost that does your dishes. This is the one that we were talking about in New Orleans. And I was like, wait a second. Can I order this ghost, please?
I say wash dishes. I mean, seeing the dishes in the sink with the water moving around and splashing. And I've seen a dish, forks, spoons, and a cup. One cup. I've seen the forks and spoons as well. Move up out of the water and sit themselves on the counter. Not into a like a rack or on a towel. We didn't have a rack, but I've seen them sit on the counter. Not upside down or anything, whatever, but just drop on the counter. What? I have seen that with my own eyes.
So when was this and what did you do? And
I was young. Five. Because we used to have to wash dishes. Back then, it wasn't nothing, no chore too little or big for a kid. Nothing. Yeah. That's including watching a baby that was 5 months old, if you're four, responsibly. So, wow. Yes, I've seen that. And I don't know what I did. You know, I mean, I just remember seeing these things. That was most impressionable. I remember that.
What do you make of that? Like, what do you think? Do you think like a spirit was trying to help you or?
No, I never thought about it like that, Emily. I just, not even until today to try and make sense of it. I just know that was a phenomenon. It's like, wow. But these occurrences were regular enough. It could have been a year, a month apart, or a week apart, 2 weeks apart. That's regular enough that you know that it's not a trick. You know that somebody's there other than you.
Yeah.
And my grandmother believed in things so much between religion and something that may be the opposite of religion. It didn't matter. If Madea said it, it was truth. That's who she was to us.
Yeah.
Like the Madea on television now. That's how our Madea was to us. That's who she was to us until the day she passed.
It's just wild. And I mean, like you said, you already know that you were living on some sort of like spiritual ground because there was a graveyard right there maybe part of your house was on a graveyard. Mm-hmm. So like you already knew that. And then you had all these weird occurrences, but then you had more when you left too. So do you think that just like a lot of the South is haunted?
I believe so. I believe that because I think as an adult, with my understanding of you know, history, past, my education about things, is that there's a lot of turmoil, to say the least, in the South, especially in certain places in the South. Some seem to be a lot worse than others. Mississippi has its history for sure and still does. And I'm talking about amongst all races. I do believe that just because you are viewed in history as a race that was the absolute perpetrator, sometimes because you are in the color of the perpetrator as viewed by most, doesn't mean that you were participating as perpetrators. Mm-hmm. But some people are held captive, mm-hmm. you know, and Stockholm is real, but mm-hmm. sometimes you have to, what choice do you have? You can't go against the majority. Mm. Sometimes you're the minority within the majority. Because we had my grandmother, she lived today, and my mother tell you, you know, all white people ain't bad, baby. You know, our family is a great mixture of a lot of people, and we have people in our families today who are friends from my grandmother's era, mm-hmm. who are in the 80s and 90s, who have been those people to us from day one that I can remember. So, as far as the ghost and these kinds of stories, or how they're attached to our family and our history, it's like everybody suffers through those things. So yeah, those stories are attached to all of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, people hurt, people have some of the same views, some of the same experiences that are related to the same view. I mean, we're just connected in so many ways the same.
That's really gracious and beautiful. I don't know if I, I feel like I like it's to think so nuanced about it and like be like, yeah, there's people that were experiencing a lot of pain as well that were, I guess, technically like the color of the problem. But hey. Yeah, it's gracious. But yeah, I mean, I just feel like so many of these stories that I hear are from the South, and it's very interesting.
Well, you say so many stories are from the South. Really quickly, if I meet anybody from Chicago, Detroit, especially Chicago, first thing I say is, and I did that in New Orleans, met somebody at the smoke shop, a smoke lounge. They were talking, and somebody said about Chicago, whatever. So I introduced myself. I said, "Who are you guys are originally? Someone in your family's from Mississippi." "Yeah, how'd you know?" "People migrate from Mississippi, especially to either Detroit or to Chicago from back in that era, because that's where the Industrial Revolution was to a great degree for us. They were looking to go do better. They don't migrate from Chicago or Detroit to Mississippi."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the likelihood of or the for people having something in common and people having this likelihood of what's in common and what's likely about people that you meet and these stories come from the South, is that that's where a lot of the negative is. That's where a lot of the commonality about the kinds of things you're talking about,
yeah,
would most likely be the connection in that number, that larger number, you know? So, you know, that's how it is. When we go to the military, and that's a big place, the military. Mm-hmm. Southern people seek each other out, they stick together. Who we have a lot of issues with, and maybe not for real reason, city people, big city people like New Yorkers and, oh my God.
Like me.
and you know, it's really not even founded sometimes. Most times we find a way to make it founded. But anyway, I won't drag you on. The story of the Hank.
Yeah.
You ever heard about Hank?
No.
I don't know what the origin of it is, but we call ghost Hanks.
Okay.
H-A-N-K. We call them Hanks. I don't know what the origin of that is. I never really looked into it. But Hanks, I've seen with my own eyes, Hanks, I don't know if they were drinking the liquor, but I've seen liquor bottles turn up, and always with a handkerchief, because older people back then had handkerchiefs for everything. They would put them in their pockets, they'd blow their nose in them, fold them nice and neatly, put them back in their pockets. Drink liquor, wipe the bottle off or the lips, put it with the snot in it. So I've seen Hank turn a liquor bottle up. My grandmother's boyfriend, Mr. Dig, Otis Dig. And he would sit on that porch and rock in his chair. And me and my brother would be sitting there and listening to Mr. Dig, or watching with that big thumb pop her hook-billed knife out like a switchblade with his thumb. And one night he drank his liquor, put his handkerchief over the top of the bottle. Mm-hmm. He went through the top back on and put it in his shirt pocket. I guess he wanted to repeat. But one night, man, that liquor bottle went up. Because we always watched Mr. Dick waiting for him to pop that thing. But we saw the liquor bottle go up, and he had the knife in his hand. And, man, he didn't do anything in that chair other than just look at the bottle. We're, like, scared because we hadn't seen a liquor bottle. We've seen dishes. We've seen the Cowboys and Calvary, all these things we've seen, but not the liquor bottle go up in the air and having an adult there, Mr. Dig, who was like the man, you know.
Did the liquor pour out?
Huh?
The liquor pour out? Like when the bottle went
up? No, it just went up in the air. The handkerchief moved from the bottle when it got up into the turn position. I've told this story to partners on the ship. They were like, "Hey, you lying, man. It's too detailed. It's too detailed. It's just too detailed." I'm like, man, I just know how to tell the story better other than I'm not a 5-year-old anymore. But that's what happened. And it came back down. Nothing spilled or, you know, and the handkerchief didn't move until the liquor bottle got up into a turn position.
Oh, my God.
And so that was it. It went back down and the handkerchief didn't go back onto the bottle to get to the ground.
So did you guys all just look at each other like, what the heck? I guess that's just that's just another night.
I guess I remember, no, my brother and I remember us like kind of like, you know, looking, and I remember scooting back, you know, you scoot back on this, like what the heck, you know?
Yeah.
So other than that, I don't guess we were just too scared, but Mr. Dig was there. Mr. Dig wasn't scared, you know, we was startled, I would say. But Mr. Dig was scared, you know? Mr. Dig and Papa's hook blade out with his thumb, like, so hey, and his dig was the man, you know, if he wasn't scared.
That is so wild. I love that story. Yeah. I love that ghosts are like, yeah, I'm dead, but I really need a drink.
Yeah. But you know, think about it. It makes me think, do what they did in their former lives. And then watching movies, are they where they should be, heaven or hell? Are they in between? And while they're in between, are they doing what they would do in their former lives? Are they trying to stay ghosts or relevant? I don't know.
Do you believe in hell?
I believe that there's a heaven and hell, but my take on hell is really not fire and brimstone. It's really what the person considered their hell was on earth. Is that why they're hanging around? Are they trying to fix what they felt their hell was on earth, not what someone else felt it was?
Okay, so mine would be like wearing Spanx all the time and having to do my nails, probably.
Now, that Spanx thing should be a lot of people's hell on earth. Not yours, but some people.
What would be
I
your
think about that for myself, though. I think about it for myself as I grow more conscious about my life as I get older. And I wonder if I wrong someone, and if I wrong someone intentionally, is that worse than wronging someone unintentionally? All kinds of stuff. I'm always at odds with myself. Yeah.
I feel like I know so many people who are like spiritual but not religious. And I feel like it's very popular to believe in some type of heaven, but less popular to believe in some type of hell.
That's well stated. I like that.
So I'm just curious. That's why I'm so curious about when people believe in hell. Like, I want to like dig on that, you know.
I like that. If I'm going to believe in something after leaving here, why not make it the most positive? Why
I even know. That's my thing. I'm like, if we don't know, I'm just going to go with what feels good because it's all too scary.
There are a lot of letters before an F. I'd rather hope for those in the afterlife versus the F. F is fire. That's failing completely. I want to pass, even if it's at the, if I get to the gates, I can hang out there.
Yeah.
That's a D.
Close. Give me a D minus. We'll do it.
Yeah. I can hang out at the gates, you know?
I think you have a higher score than a D minus.
We'll see.
I just want to know if there's anything else that you want to talk about spiritual-wise or ghost-wise before we wrap up.
No, spiritual-wise. Well, spiritual-wise, it's just on my own personal note. And I've talked about this with a good close partner of mine who used to always consider himself, I can't think of the term now, Bill Marius. What's the term?
Oh, atheist?
Atheist, right. And I'm like, hey, your thing is your thing. I don't care. I mean, you're good to me, I'm good to you. Mm-hmm. And that's what we always center our religious conversation around. I always thought and believe that if you're good to somebody, you're good to them. So whatever someone's concept or idea is about what the Bible says, I always used to be sarcastic. Okay, spell Bible for me. What does it mean to you? My father always says his basic instructions before leaving Earth. It's what his idea, what the acronym means.
But, oh, I love that.
Yeah. So if the Bible and what is between those covers suits you, then it suits you. You're not the one to preach it to me. So if I'm going to be good to you, and that's a general concept, okay, if it's yours or mine, I'm all right with being good to you and you be good to me. So that's my religion.
I love that. Cool. Well, thank you for doing the pod.
All right, y'all, take care of yourselves.
I'll text you when it's out. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Comedians with Ghost Stories. If you are enjoying this podcast, please rate and review it so more people can find it. And have a wonderful week.